This is Freedom First, and I'm Jeffrey Tucker. I'd like to talk to you today about a peculiar problem, the decline and fall of the American work ethic. Now, this is very difficult to document. In fact, we have very little data on it, but you know it's true. You've seen it in your own workplaces. You've heard it from your friends who say they can't find anybody to hire who knows how to work anymore. Colleges are not teaching people skills. We've had to set up a gigantic credentialing system even to find people to do basic things like accounting, financial analysis, just to perform routine tasks, operation tasks. There's a whole generation or two or three that seem to have been socialized into doing everything but what they're supposed to do at the office. Now, I want to explain that I believe this is a consequence of Federal Reserve policy that really began after 9/11, once we started suppressing interest rates to zero. American corporations got flush with cash. That's part of the point of the policy. And with that cash, they ended up just throwing it at laborers and developed huge puffy workforces, and an entire ethos developed around the idea of pretending to work but not actually working. So that for two decades or more, you know, managers have wanted to have better marketing, so they hire more marketing people, and always with the highest credentials. Ivy League educations, oh, we need, you know, smart people, we need quants for our new data systems, we need compliance people for our new compliance, and the teams grew bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger, involving tens, hundreds of thousands of people to form a new managerial class that didn't actually have any skills except for the ability to survive in the workplace. That's just true. And it's really been tragic to watch. And during the same period of time, we saw the rise of everything except profitability as a metric of success. So ESG and DEI and everything associated with that, all an extension of really bad Federal Reserve policy, which has destroyed the American work ethic at the highest levels. Not the lowest levels. Certainly here you find real workers if you can find anybody with any actual skills. But at the highest managerial levels, the professional workplace has just been gutted of talent. And it's a serious problem. Now, to illustrate the solution, I want to point to the experience of Elon Musk at Twitter. So let's just go back a year and just try to reconstruct exactly what happened. We had come out of the COVID period of massive censorship in all social media. It became very intense, and it affected his favorite platform, which was Twitter. He saw people being deplatformed. If you had the wrong views, you would just get your account deleted. You could see your throttling taking place. Keep in mind that Elon Musk himself never accepted the COVID lockdowns. He moved his company from California to Texas because he couldn't stand it anymore. And he was always a dissenter against prevailing narratives coming from the federal government. He just didn't believe it. It wasn't who he was. He had very good sense. He's no question he's a genius. But more importantly than that, he had common sense, and he knew that locking the country down and not allowing his workers to go to work was not going to stop the spread of a respiratory virus. He knew this and never believed, never played along. But he couldn't get his views out there, and Twitter was clearly being throttled in some way. And this offended him greatly because he's a free speech absolutist. He thinks that, I think rightly, that without free speech, we don't have freedom. And that the backdrop of freedom itself is free speech. Well, he seems to be blessed with a lot of money, so he threw around the idea that he would just buy Twitter, just buy it, and turn it into a free speech venue, and which he did. And he made an offer publicly on Twitter and challenged stockholders to come to his defense against the board wishes that he owned the place. He finally rammed it through. At some point, they forced him to buy at a very high price that he shouldn't have paid, which is $44 billion, an unbelievable amount of money, for a company that turns out to have not been worth nearly that. Most of the data they were cranking out was illusory. So, but he's now the new owner of Twitter. So he came in walking with a bathtub, you know, with the illusions of draining the swamp, he was going to clean things up. It was a sink, actually. And sure enough, he did. Immediately, he started firing vast numbers of people, just operating off instinct alone. He had a sense that vast numbers of people worked there who were actually not working at all. And he knew this because he knows corporate culture very well. He's been keeping his own companies very clean of irrelevant, stupid, baloney-thinking employees who are just there to make big salaries and not to actually do anything. He keeps that out of his companies, and he was determined to do this at Twitter. So he fired 3 out of 5 employees immediately and began to look around. It turned out vast amounts of the operations of Twitter itself were dedicated solely to censorship and to corporate gobbledygook. I mean, incredibly, even after his first wave of firings, which took place over the course of a fortnight, it was amazing to watch, amazing. The platform actually worked better than ever. Suddenly, we were unthrottled. They started tearing out the mucky wires, firing all the FBI employees, you know, people that were there just paid to spy and work for the government. We got rid of them all, or most of that he could find, and really tried to turn it back into a profit-making business. Eventually, over the coming weeks and months, he ended up firing 4 out of 5 employees, again, making the company work better than ever and making the platform better than ever. And over the subsequent year, he's turned X into the single most valuable mainstream social media platform out there, precisely because it's not censored. And it's still not making profits yet, of course, but the advertisers are gradually coming back. He faced a brutal advertising boycott from all the elite companies who, you know, even though traffic was up, even though they could reach new audiences, they were still pulling out because in American capitalism these days, it's not so much profitability that drives decision-making at the highest levels, but rather political compliance. And we can talk about that some other time. It's the strangest turn of American capitalism you can ever imagine. Nonetheless, the advertisers are coming back, and he put into place a profitability model with premium services. Now he offers the only artificial intelligence language edition out there that is not completely biased and rigged by that left-wing bias. It's called Grok. It's not generally available, but it is available to premium subscribers. And I can just tell you from a personal point of view, I find the thing invaluable. Of course, it doesn't know all truth. But if you need quick facts, for example, how much did Elon pay for Twitter? It's going to tell you. Or when did the Royal Mint in Britain nationalize the currency? 1813. Okay, it knows these kinds of things. And it's liberated me personally from Google. So I consider Grok to be invaluable, and I can't wait for it to be generally available to everybody. Anyway, Elon has done a great job at Twitter 2.0, a company he renamed as X. And it's just been beautiful to watch. I've had several experiences in talking to new hires in their advertising accounts because Brownstone Institute uses X's advertising services and that sort of thing. And they're new hires, and they're utterly and completely dedicated to their jobs. Quick to call you back, quick to explain things, really on the ball. I mean, it's just a wonderful company at this point. And everybody's, as Elon says, hardcore. Well, the other day, he sent out a little note that I was interested. I found it really fascinating. He said that he has a 3-prong test for all employees. So I'm very curious about this topic of staffing, having managed large staffs myself, and trying to find the right people for the right position, and whether those positions should even exist. I'm very interested in this question of hiring and how it works. He advanced a 3-prong test for everybody at Twitter, which he says, yeah, everybody there should be hardcore. The first is that they should be excellent. The second is that they should be necessary. And the third is that they should be trustworthy. Intrigued by this, let's just deconstruct this. In the first place, excellence. Okay. Excellence means doing the job you're there to do to serve the company and its goals, namely to make profits by creating great products and services that help the consumer that people want to buy. That's what excellence means. It doesn't mean creating a bunch of fake Excel spreadsheets with careful colors, pretending to manage people, not actually knowing what it is you're managing. It doesn't mean strutting around with waving your diploma at people and wasting everybody's time with Zoom meetings, which is, I don't know, 80, 90% of what people do in the upper echelons of American corporate life today. It doesn't mean mastering a new vocabulary of corporate management speak, you know, which everybody in that realm seems to have done these days. It means actually doing real stuff, uploading things, doing accounting, balance sheets, figuring out what's going where, improving products, deploying technologies, finishing projects, taking responsibility for your work, being willing to work extra hours, not minding it when you get texted after five by your manager or by a customer, picking up the phone when people call, when you're on vacation, staying connected, not forever worrying about your work-life balance, but rather just really dedicated to your work. Let me pause there on the point about work-life balance. I've had the occasion to interview many people over the years for various positions, and I've noticed in job interviews that you can tell the difference between excellence and not excellence. Okay, so the not excellent employee will get on a job interview and act like, maybe I'll take the job, maybe I won't. Maybe I'll learn about your company and ask questions, or maybe I won't. But the one thing that they're really dedicated to is finding out all the benefits. How much time do I get in paid time off? What are typically raises? What's the schedule for raises? What does your health plan pay for? How often do I have to come into the office? How many remote days can I earn over time? So if you get just endless questions about this, you know this is not a person who actually wants a job. They want a paycheck, and they want privileges, and they want a sinecure, basically. They want what vast numbers of people in the upper tier of the professional managerial class today have, which is a no-show job that pays a lot of money. And that is definitely not a person you want. And it's always a sure sign when people talk about work-life balance. Now, I've always been intrigued by this. On one hand, there is an intuition at work here that you don't always want to be working. You want to be able to go skiing, go surfing, watch Netflix in the evening while shutting down work. You don't want to spend every night and every weekend doing this, and you do want to be able to go on vacations. Okay, if that's what you mean by work-life balance, fine, but that's typically not what people mean. What people mean to do is concentrate or distinguish between life on one hand, which is good, all living life, and work on the other, which takes away from life. So what is work? Work is laborious and annoying and the thing you do to pay the rent, pay your cell phone bill, but it's not life. I mean, if you're going to talk like that, you're never going to enjoy work. I mean, the point is that most of our life consists of producing things, making the world a better place, doing things for others. Working is part of life. There's no real distinction between the two. And if you think that there's a sharp system that demarcates one from the other, you've already got a problem. So when people are in job interviews with me and tell me about it's really important that I recognize the importance of their own work-life balance, I think, well, here's a great way to keep your work-life balance in place. Don't come to work for us. There. Now you've got your balance, all right? You like it? But if you're going to take a salary, then there's an economic element here. You've got to bring more value to the project at the company than you're taking out in the form of a salary. I mean, you have to be a net benefit to the company and to the project you're serving. So if you're pulling in $150,000 a year, you need to be able to demonstrate that in your absence, the company would lose that much and vastly more than that in your absence, which means you have to be tremendously excellent. You have to be worth every penny that you're being paid and then some. You need to have the company profit by having employed you and paid you, okay? That's a serious challenge. What do you have to do to obtain that at these highest hours? You have to be amazing. Or as Elon would put it, you have to be excellent. Okay. All right. Now, the second standard, necessary. I like this word, right? I mean, no employee should work for anyone if they're not necessary. I've always had a rule in every job situation I've ever been in terms of hiring. You don't hire until it hurts, which is another way of saying you want to do as much as you possibly can yourself and only hire somebody to help you once that becomes an implausible thing. Like you're actually out of time. You cannot have your attention split in so many different directions. And when you feel that pain, that's when you should hire. And you should hire somebody to do what you would otherwise be doing so that you can then do the thing that's more valuable for your time. That's called the division of labor, and that's the point at which you should hire. So firms, really, in an ideal sense, should be an extension of one person. Starting a firm, realizing they needed some help, knows how to do the job, could do it, but needs to be focused on other things. So you hire an assistant to help you, and that person hires another person to help him, and so on it goes. You can scale this up to hundreds and thousands and tens of thousands and potentially hundreds of thousands of people in a single firm if you build according to the standard of what is absolutely necessary. You should never employ anyone who's unnecessary or even task anybody with a job that is unnecessary to the business of doing business itself. Now, that's a great standard because, again, it eliminates half or more of most employees in corporate America today, you know, most of whom are not necessary. They're just luxury hires. They're just checking boxes. Oh, we need marketing. Oh, we need quants. We need metrics. We need compliance. You know, are they necessary? Probably not. And what was interesting about this whole issue is that during when lockdowns happened, right, and so everybody was sent home, and people tried to figure out new ways to work from their desktops, companies all over the country noticed that not that much changed about their operations. Well, it's true that a lot of people were working from home, but a lot of people were just goofing off and getting on Zoom meetings and talking the talk for an hour a day and otherwise using what they call mouse jigglers to look as if they're working. These are products you could buy from Amazon to hook up to your laptop to make it look like you're typing frantically on your computer, where actually you're just lazing around getting some sun outdoors by the pool or whatever. This is a best-selling product on Amazon, the mouse jiggler. So the lockdowns kind of exposed the worthlessness of most employees, or a lot of employees in corporate America today. Their jobs simply aren't necessary. They should just never have been given to them in the first place. So Elon's standard is it has to be necessary. The third one that he advances is this word trustworthy. Now, I'm intrigued by this. It doesn't just mean you shouldn't steal, you shouldn't lie, right? I mean, you shouldn't just use the company credit card to pillage the company. It means that you tell the truth in your business relationships and that you can be trusted to finish projects. If you say you're going to do something, you actually do complete the job. You don't have to be told again and again and again. If somebody tells you to do something and that person's a superior or a boss, you make that the first priority. You don't put them off. You don't have to make them have to come and remind you, hey, whatever happened to that that project you were doing, oh, well, I've just been so busy. I just didn't have time to do it yet. I'll get right on that. hey, did you contact that other company and make that contract with them? Do I have any evidence of what you did there? Oh, gosh, that just slipped my mind. Okay, you do this enough, it means you're not really trustworthy. You're not a dependable employee who takes responsibility. So it's not just that, though. There's something else to this idea of trustworthiness. It means also not to be a source of internal politics and gossip within the company, and a person who drips poison at other people's ears and complains constantly about being overworked and underpaid and tries to find other people in a company who feel the same way. We don't get enough treats around here. You know, we're not taking enough daily newspapers. The coffee flavor's not good enough for me. I don't like sparkling water, I only like still water. How can we have distilled water instead of purified water? We need to have more PTO time. People are just constantly disgruntled. Those kinds of people, which typically are the people who are not excellent and the people who are probably not necessary, tend to be untrustworthy too. The people that are constantly kvetching about their lives, and they find others within the organization, and they tend to hang out together. They go to lunch and they complain about the boss, they complain about the product, they complain about the production schedules, they complain constantly of being overworked and underpaid. These are the disgruntled employees. They are not trustworthy because they are actively poisoning the environment for everybody else. And here's a secret that you find out about corporate life. Good workers don't like bad workers. They don't like them because it's discrediting their work and demotivating everybody else. If you have 50 amazing employees who are excellent, trustworthy, and deeply necessary, and 3 that are not excellent, not necessary, and untrustworthy, those 3 can poison everybody else by recruiting people on their sides, by demoralizing everybody else, and mostly, this is the worst thing, they keep their jobs because, I don't know, they're a cousin, because somebody's afraid to fire them for fear of a lawsuit, whatever. The presence of unproductive, unnecessary, not excellent employees poisons everything for everyone else in the firm. They have to go. I mean, I've been a part of so many teams where everybody knew who the layabouts were, the lounge lizards and the losers, but they kept getting paid. And they would hang out with other lounge lizards and losers and layabouts, and they would get together and complain about their plight. And everybody knew who they were, but the boss wouldn't fire them, and it was demoralizing. Like, why should you work like crazy, constantly doing what you're supposed to do, always being willing to work after hours, always being willing to pick up the phone or answer emails on the weekend, where some other guy never does anything and is just kind of tricking the management to think he's doing something and gets a higher salary or the same salary as you and nothing happens to him? That's extremely demotivating for the other employees. So those people absolutely need to be fired. They need to be fired yesterday. And that's the thing about Elon. He really does get this, which is to say he has common sense. In other words, he operates like a manager in the 80s or the 90s in America. Like this whole ethos we have of nonsense jobs, of unexcellent, untrustworthy people dominating the corporate workplace, which is true across so many industries in the U.S. today, it's all new. And I don't believe it happened by accident. It happened because the Federal Reserve was subsidizing the higher ends of the production structures and giving out basically free credit to vast numbers of highly capitalized companies where they could extend their workforces and pay people gargantuan amounts of money for doing nothing. And it's utterly wrecked the work ethic of the American workforce. Now, some of this has started to change a little bit. We've seen a lot of firings, some trimming back in large tech companies, media companies. They're firing workers, getting rid of people. So some of the upper echelons are starting to feel the heat. But my sense is that it's only just begun. as a country, we need to rediscover the work ethic, and we need to do it for all age groups and in all industries. Rediscover the joy associated with being excellent, being deeply necessary, earning your keep, being super trustworthy, always accomplishing what you're supposed to do, and being on fire with love of work as life. That's what Elon is going for. That's the ethos he's trying to instill at his new company X, and that's why it's doing so well in a market sense. It's not just a free speech platform, but it's a well-run and administered platform that cares about profitability. It's a hungry company that wants to change the world. That's what America used to be before it became fat and puffy and lazy and unskilled and untrustworthy. Can it be brought back? Yes, it can. I bet you know companies in your own neighborhood that are this way, that are really on the ball. They serve the customer. Their employees are happy. They're making money. It can happen, one company at a time. As consumers, we should support companies that are trying to bring back the work ethic and not tolerate these companies that are puffed up, arrogant, and serving something other than their customer. They're serving BlackRock or DEI goals or ESG goals or doing the silly corporate speak all the time and neglecting their customers. We can change this. We can have a hand. Ultimately, the best form of capitalism is a system in which the common person is in charge through their ability as a consumer to determine which companies profit and which ones go down. Now, we've long ago left such a system. We have all sorts of things that are intervening between the customer's wishes and the company's output. Companies no longer believe that serving the customer is their main path to profitability. Serving the government, for many industries these days, is the main path to profitability. I just have to say that I really admire Elon for what he's done to X. And I'm not saying he's a perfect guy and that all his decisions are perfect or everything is, but he really did enact an industrial transformation of one company for the ages. I mean, it should have been on the cover of Fortune, on Inc., on Forbes. Everybody should have celebrated this. Amazing. Firing 4 out of 5 employees and getting a better product as a result. That's just one company. Imagine if we had the same standards for government itself. Excellent, necessary, and trustworthy. How about this? We sweep through all 400 plus government agencies and apply that standard to every last soul who works there, millions of people. Are you excellent? Are you necessary? And are you trustworthy? If you're not, if you can't check every box, you are gone.